dick move.
And Paul won't be there, so it's going to be more of a party. Welcome to episode 117 of the Talk to Contact podcast. Back in the host chair, I'm E-Rolf Pleiss, joined by the Nodak Twins fan Cody Christie and Jay motherfucking Korn from the shores of Lake Minnetonka. Gentlemen, welcome back.
Good evening. How are you guys doing tonight?
Listen, I've been better. I had to go, after a long day of work, I had to go over and meet with my new boss at my part-time job, and that guy's a real asshole.
I hear that.
So, that guy is also Jay.
Ah.
Yeah, so. Eric and I had a nice chat this afternoon over some homebrew beers in downtown Minneapolis. Eric's going to write some brewery and distillery and brewmaster stuff for redcurrent.com, and we're looking forward to sharing that here on Talk to Contact as well.
Yeah, I'm going to be the chief drunk at Redcurrent.
That's right, chief drunk. There's quite the competition, too. No, I'm just kidding. But yeah, no, Eric, thanks for coming in. We all enjoyed having you in the office, and I'm sure it's the beginning of a fabulous friendship.
Yeah. And Cody, we haven't talked to you for 14 days.
Correct, sir.
Because you were teaching?
Well, I wasn't teaching, but it was finals week last week. So I always make my sophomores write these long essays for their finals. So then it takes me forever to grade them because I have to read them. So maybe I need to adjust that for next year and put less work on myself during finals week when we have to get grades done by the end of the week. But yeah, it was good. Good show without me. And we got plenty of stuff to talk about tonight.
So I don't understand this. Finals are after the holiday break?
Yes, sir.
Has that always been a thing?
In North Dakota, yeah.
Oh, whenever I was in school, all finals were always before the holiday break. Long as I can remember.
Yeah, I don't, just the way they make our schedule. We basically had, we came back from break and had one full week and then a couple regular days of classes and then 3 days of finals.
The kids just forget everything you taught them before Christmas?
Well, yeah, they forget what I teach them on Monday when it's the end of the week.
You must be a great educator.
Yeah, my program's a little bit different. I'm not teaching them math skills that they need to remember equations and stuff like that. Mine's
baseball skills, right?
Yep. I'm teaching about wins above replacement and BABIP and stuff like that.
The important things you need to know in life to get ahead.
Yep.
Sweet. Well, the Twins were busy this week, as we all were. They avoided arbitration, surprise, surprise, with everyone that was arbitration eligible. I don't think the Twins have been to arbitration with anyone since Kevin Slowey, like in 2009 or 10. Does that sound about right?
I don't think that one ever went. I think the on Twin Cities, Berardino said it hasn't been since Loesch in 2005-06.
Okay, so it's been a long time, and the Twins have always hated to go to arbitration.
And they do have two guys left that they haven't settled with. You said everybody, but Dunsing and Schaefer are still out there.
Okay, so but they did avoid arbitration then with Plouffe. With
big,
Tommy Malone. Yeah, Plouffe makes $4.8 million and definitely gets a bump there after a strong performance in 2014. Definitely set him up to be a guy to get a big jump.
Yeah, he'll become the highest paid third baseman in franchise history. Corey Koski had the honor at $4.5 million back in 2004 when the Twins were coming off of a few division championships in a row, and he had been a key part of those teams. So now Plouffe can hold this honor for how long till Sano passes him? 5 years?
Well, or till the Twins extend Sano, right? That could be after his first game.
Yes.
Who knows? So, not for long, probably.
Yes. But Nice little tidbit for Mr. Ploofy.
So Ploof 4.8, Tommy Malone comes in at 2.775 million, which I think ended up being almost right on the nose with what Jeremy Nygaard had pegged him at earlier this winter. So, you know, almost just under $3 million for the Twins' only left-handed starter and a guy that, I don't know, is projected to have an ERA about 4.5 this year.
Woo! Buckle up, ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah, so I guess you get what you pay for there. Casey Fien makes $1.375 million. That's, you know, you're getting a lot from Fien there for a bargain price. So that's my favorite one of these numbers out of all of them. And then Eduardo Nunez, who the Twins are still keeping around, they're paying him just over $1 million, $1,025,000, with seemingly replacement level defensive skills, below replacement level offense. I don't know what's going on with Nunez at all. It's baffling.
It's organizational depth. He'll be playing at AAA. I don't foresee a situation where he's on the 25-man roster unless we have some injuries that pop up here or there. $1 million is nothing.
Well, right, but except when you're wholly replaceable and there's 100 minor leaguers that have the same skill set as you.
But, I don't know. He's got experience, I guess, to back him up. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you think he's a liability? I don't think he's a liability, but I'm sure there's a couple other guys that are anxious to unseat him. We might see that before too long.
Yeah, maybe I'm just upset about something that won't even matter, right? I mean, at the end of the day, if he's on the roster for the entire year, it costs the Twins an extra $500,000.
And, oh, he's out of options, too. Oh, so he might... Oh, that changes things.
Well,
unless someone claims him, I guess.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter that much, right? Because even if no one... I mean, you're basically saying you're giving you $1 million. You might play, you might not. You know, but at $1 million, he has to accept an assignment, right? If he chooses to become a free agent, then he doesn't get that $1 million, right? Unless they release him outright.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't know. $1 million probably doesn't even matter. I've wasted enough time talking about him.
Yes, about something that isn't going to be that important.
The second best the second best Eduardo on a team where the first Eduardo isn't that good in the first place.
Very much so.
So yeah.
Yeah, it looks like Schaefer was requesting $1.7 million, and the Twins countered at $1.4 million. Hearings don't start till February 2nd and run through February 20th. So, I don't know. They'll get something
done. They'll
get something done with him. I'm not seeing the Dunsing numbers off the top of what I'm looking at right now, but he's getting a bump again. I don't know. I thought they would cut ties with him before last season because he was getting too expensive and he only had a so-so season, and they brought him back again. So, shows what I know. They must really like Brian Dunsing. Must be a good clubhouse guy.
Must be.
Yeah, I mean, he's left-handed in the bullpen, and they like that because Perkins is their other guy. But he hasn't been exciting for, I don't know, except for that first year they put him into the bullpen, there was a little bit of excitement with him. His numbers jumped up a little bit, but, you know, unless you're hoping that either him or Malone become a swingman or, you know, maybe log some longer innings as middle relief mop-up type guys, you know, I don't trust Dunsing high leverage late in a game. I mean, he's left-handed, so maybe he's situational, but he doesn't have those typical loogie splits.
No.
You know, so that doesn't peg him into a role. And so it'll be interesting to see how the Twins are going to put this team together if Dunsing is indeed, you know, back.
Especially with, I think we're going to see some of those college arms that are in the minor leagues move up the system pretty quick this year. So if those guys are sitting at and being lights out in the higher levels of the minor leagues, and Dunsing's being Dunsing some more, I mean, who's to say one of those college guys could come up here and at least be a strikeout threat against batters where Dunsing hasn't done that in a while.
Hey, speaking of guys up in the high minor leagues, did you guys see what Nick Birdie tweeted this morning?
No.
I did not, no.
Tell me more.
I wonder if he still has it up there on his Twitter. It looks like it's gone. But Parker Hagerman from Twins Daily captured it earlier today. Nick Birdie said something like, "I don't need videos and Instagram's telling everyone how hard I work this winter."
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, Gleeman sent it out too. "I don't need vines and tweets to tell me how hard I'm working."
Blue right, which collar. Is in direct, I guess, directly aimed probably at Jose Berrios, who has been all over social media about how hard he's working and how ripped he's getting. I think we even talked about it a couple of times last week, a week before that as well, about, you know, what he's doing, how hard he's working, and how excited we are for him to get in and show off this spring. So
there was another thing, and I forgot about this. I think it was over her Christmas break, where a guy put something on Twitter, a former Twin now, and I saw it, and I was going to retweet it, and then when I went to it, he had deleted it, like. So he must have, like, hit enter and then was like, "Oh, I probably shouldn't say that." But Anthony Swarzak had some not-so-nice things to say about the Twins. Well, not necessarily. He didn't call out the Twins, but he said something about not pitching. I'm trying to remember how he worded it, but how he needed to start being worried more about his numbers and not pitching the way the team was telling him how to pitch.
Ooh.
That makes sense. I don't understand that. You're going to have to walk me through
I'm
that.
I'm pretty worried about his numbers. But that's the Indians' problem now.
Yeah. He was, I mean, I think he was hinting at that the Twins were sending him out there to do certain things or something that weren't helping his numbers, but that he should have been more worried about, you know, having a low ERA and, you know, all those other numbers that he wasn't getting because of the situations he was being put into. You know, I mean, he had to start and make starts. I don't know if he was talking about that, but he had wanted to be a starter anyway, you know, so.
Well, how many times did, you know, he had prolonged success in mop-up and garbage duty.
Yeah.
It seemed like every time the Twins gave him an opportunity in a bigger role, you know, higher leverage innings or a chance to have a few more starts, he couldn't ever succeed there. You know,
yeah.
It was like as the pressure ramped up, his performance ramped right back down. So, I don't know.
And I remember when he was at the Twins caravan stop here in Fargo last year, and they... someone asked him about, you know, starter, reliever, a question like that. And I believe he was talking in reference to Terry Ryan had said, you know, "We're going to give you the opportunity to start here or there, but you have to show us that you want it or that you deserve it." And yeah, I guess that's the Indians' problem now.
Does Terry Ryan tell that to everyone, right? Tim Stauffer got the same offer, right?
Same
pep
talk. Twins
give you, we're going to give you a chance to start, even though, you know, you've basically proven that you can't already, but sure, why not?
And we have eight other guys ahead of you in the pecking order. You only got to pass like four of them to get up in the rotation.
But
have
sure,
fun.
We'll let you start a spring training game and pitch for an inning.
Yeah, on the bus ride across the state of Florida to go play the Cardinals on the...
On a split squad.
Yeah. Good stuff. One of the
So.
guys that won't be going with the Twins on any split squad games is Mr. Hudson Boyd, a former supplemental first round pick. Found out just in the last day or so, he has been suspended for 50 games for his second positive test for a drug of abuse.
Do we know what that drug was? Do we know what
no,
it was?
No, it hasn't been out there. My guess would be he's always had trouble with weight, so I'm guessing it was probably some type of supplement to try and help him lose weight. Because he's 6'3", and he's over 230. Last year he got suspended once just for violating team rules. The Twins paid him $1 million, which was over $350,000 over what the slot was for that spot. But he hasn't really been that impressive. They moved him full time last year and he pitched out of the Cedar Rapids bullpen. And he had a 500 record and an ERA of over four. He did get some saves opportunities.
Essentially a second full year at Cedar Rapids. And I mean, he was a high school draft pick, right? So
yeah.
That's,
he's 22.
Yeah, so I mean, it was still his age 21 season last year. So, but you got to think, 4.34 at low A. That doesn't scream move me up a level, coach. You know, now all of a sudden you're 22 at low A. You know, so now your path gets even harder, and coming down from a top 40 pick, that's a long way to fall for a young kid.
Yeah, I mean, he's never been. He's not going to crack any top 30 prospect list for the Twins anytime soon, unless he just came back and had a monster second half next year. But I mean, we've seen some of these other guys that are coming back from these suspensions. It takes them a little bit to get back into game shape and get themselves up to speed with where the rest of the guys are after, you know, missing spring training or whatever.
And how bad do you think Hudson Boyd wants to get to Fort Myers? Because he is a Fort Myers guy. He went to high school in Fort Myers. So he's probably thinking he's working as hard as Jose Berrios this winter, just without any fanfare and a little bit of extra illegal activities to try and get to Fort Myers. Right? He wants to get home, relax, maybe something changes.
Yeah.
So he'll be spending some time at extended spring training in lovely Fort Myers.
Maybe that was his goal all along.
So he's gotten right where he wants to go, I suppose. It's always a bummer when you hear someone in the org doing that. I think that's going to happen, especially with the pretty extensive drug testing system they have in the minor leagues. But
and you know what? To be honest, I don't have any problem with it. I don't care if it's pot or coke or heroin, methamphetamine, weight loss supplement. I don't really care what it is. The rules are super clear. And these guys are well-versed on it. You know, they take mandatory training and classes or whatever they do. So they know exactly mistakes happen. I think we saw that last year in Baltimore with, what was it, Adderall and Chris Davis. You know, I mean, so there are cases where I kind of do have a little bit of sympathy for the guy, but given the sport's recent history, I just don't think that there's any other tactic to take. You have to have this zero tolerance policy. Every club has been affected equally. You know, even if and you know what, a weight loss supplement is an enhancement, is a performance enhancing drug to me. So if it is a weight loss or heroin, the difference is minimal to me, and the punishment should be the same.
Yeah, 50 games across the board. So, you know, if he bounces back and does something great, you know, maybe he's willing to pay the price if he can get his weight under control and, like, allows him to have more repeatable mechanics or, you know, whatever those little gains you could make from something like that. More power to him, I guess, at the end of the day. But as a personal interest story, you got to feel for the kid just trying to do what he can to make a club.
Yeah.
So, Oswaldo Arcia was granted a fourth option year And so this gives the Twins an opportunity to send him down to AAA if he struggles again or has decided that he still likes swinging at every pitch in the zip code.
Yeah, he was added to the 40-man after the 2011 season. And so he had been optioned the past three seasons, but they were given a fourth option year because he spent less than 10 days in the minor leagues last year. So even though they did option him it once last year, it didn't. He was a major leaguer for the whole season, basically. So the other players with one option remaining are Aaron Hicks, Josmiel Pinto, Chris Herman, and then relievers Stephen Pryor, Lester Oliveros, and Aaron Thompson. And then there's some other guys that have multiple options left, like Mike Pelfrey, apparently, Ryan Pressly, and Caleb Thielbar. So maybe those Pelfrey options could come in handy.
That doesn't even seem possible for Pelfrey.
I guess.
But I guess some of his minor league stints were injury related.
Yeah.
The last couple of years, so that probably accounts for that. So I don't know. Arcia needs to be healthy, and he needs to be a little bit more discerning at the plate. And I don't think the option year is an issue with him. I mean, he's got a stick, but sending him down to AAA where he's crushed the ball and can,
maybe all this injury stuff from the winter leagues. I mean, if he looks slower, looks like he's trying to get himself worked back in, maybe they say, well, how about you go down, see some AAA pitching, get yourself right, and then come back up. That would be the only scenario, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know. Well, we'll see. I think he's locked into an opening day roster spot unless he shows up to spring training and is unable to play. But
then he'd be on the DL.
I mean, he's still playing down in the winter league, so
yeah,
I don't think there's any concerns about that.
And he's coming to Twins Fest for the first time ever.
So bring your prospect handbook
from a few years ago.
Handbooks, whatever.
Yep,
if you have collections of them, like I'm sure all of you listeners do.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
It's a great great thing to do.
Yeah.
Plus, those minor league families, they're buying half these handbooks, I bet.
They probably are.
It's possible.
One of the biggest stories of the week was, it didn't necessarily involve the Twins per se, but it will definitely help them out because Max Scherzer, a known Twin killer, is no longer in the AL Central. He signed with the Washington Nationals for 7 years, $210 million. But an interesting quirk of the contract is he's going to be getting paid $14 million, I believe, for the next – or yeah, $14 million for however many – for multiple years. They're deferring – a bunch of the money. So long after he's no longer playing for the Nationals, he'll still be getting paid by the Nationals. So it was definitely an interesting approach to the contract because they were able to outbid many other teams by doing the contract this way. I believe it was like $66 million more than what the Tigers had offered. An interesting way to approach it because $14 million in, a decade from now is different than $14 million this year. In the grand scheme of things.
I think you're going to see – I just don't think this is fair. I just really don't. I think you're going to see, for lack of a better term, legislation come down in the next few years that prohibits this kind of contract because it's just circumventing the salary cap. That's all it's doing.
There's no salary cap.
So, the luxury tax, whatever you want to call it. It allows teams to spend more next year and the year after and backload these contracts.
They've been doing this, right? I mean, for a long time.
This guy's going to be retired.
Pujols has tons of backload on his contract. The Mets are still paying a guy for like six more years.
Bonilla.
Bonilla. If it hasn't been an issue before, because that money goes onto the books eventually. So it doesn't just disappear. And for teams that are want to win right now and can leverage the future, right? I mean, the Nats have the team. Their starting rotation is six guys deep, and all of them might be the Twins' best pitcher.
I hear what you're saying, but baseball is like the only sport where almost all of the money is guaranteed most of the time. In football, it's not like that. In basketball, it's not like that. You know, the player has to either, you know, be on the field or hit certain checkpoints or whatever it is. I mean, Max Scherzer is going to be 50 years old and still making $14 million a year from the Nationals. I mean, I just don't like it. I know it's legal. I know every other team can do it. I know it's fair. It's within the rules. I know it's been done before, going back many years, but I just don't like it. And I'd really like to see some sort of language in the next CBA that at least curbs it a little bit. Don't you guys agree in principle? I mean,
who do you think this hurts?
I mean, it doesn't hurt anybody. It just allows the Nationals to bid $66 million more than the Tigers, you know?
But the Tigers could have done the same thing.
I get that. I know.
I mean, if it doesn't hurt anyone, then it doesn't necessarily help them because they now have $14 million forever on their books.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a huge amount of money. That keeps you from signing Torii Hunter and Mike Pelfrey for a year.
Yes. Okay, I don't know. That's what the Nationals are going to be looking to do.
No, so, I mean, that's how I feel about it. But you know what? The Nationals are just – I mean, they're scary. I mean, they're scary. That rotation is just ridiculous. And then you add in some of the offensive pieces with, you know, Harper and Worth and, you know, they're –
Denard Span,
they got that.
Anthony Rendon at third base.
I was going to say the middle infield. I mean, just all around, the Nationals are strong. I mean,
we've been saying that for a couple of years.
Well, I mean, they haven't been strong like this in the last few. I mean, but, and that division's weak.
Don't forget, they still got Wilson Ramos.
That's what I was just speaking of. I had his name on the tip of my tongue. I couldn't get it. But I mean, the Mets suck. The Phillies are terrible. You know, the Braves are nowhere near the Braves of old. Not only is the division ripe for the picking, and then the Marlins, I mean, they're just a lost cause. I just don't see anybody beating out the Nationals for that NL East.
Unless there were a ton of injuries or something like that, but they even have depth at a few different positions. So
imagine what that team will look like if Ramos can stay healthy for an entire year. I mean, because Jose Lobaton, as their backup catcher catching half the games, hurts that team offensively. But if Wilson Ramos is healthy, there's no stopping this ball club, right? I mean,
that's a good point, but I really think the linchpin to the whole Nationals, I mean, we don't want to get too much, but I mean, it's Harper. Harper missed some time last year. He's always, you know, getting in a fight or blowing a fuse or throwing a batting helmet. You know, he's kind of got a sideshow vibe to him. You know, he requires a lot of attention. You know, he's kind of pouty. So, I mean, if Harper can stay healthy and off the disciplinary radar, I mean, then there's no stopping him.
Jay, he's a reverse Joe Mauer.
Exactly, right?
When are you going to stop complaining about the temperament?
I'm not complaining
about
that. I'm just saying the guy missed a bunch
of
time.
You either want it or you don't want it.
I didn't say I didn't like it. I mean, I'm just saying the guy can be a distraction. That's all.
Well, I don't know. I would take it every day if it came along with Bryce Harper.
I would too.
So, all right. Well, enough about the Nationals. We know they're going to be good. They're going to be one of the best teams in the National League, them and the Dodgers. Look out. But so now I guess, Cody, you posed this question and then we derailed ourselves. Max Scherzer is out of the American League Central. This will help the Twins, but what? The Twins might face another pitcher in the American League 4 or 5 times if they catch everything right?
Yeah, see, I don't think that's how it helps the Twins. I think it helps the Twins by weakening the Tigers. I mean, we saw Verlander is obviously, you know, on the decline after last year. I mean, the signs are all there. The Tigers lost a big piece. I mean, a big piece. Taking Max Scherzer out of their rotation every fifth day. And then who are they going to replace him with is kind of the other question, you know?
And David Price is only under contract for one more season.
What's that?
David Price is only under contract for one more season with them as well.
Yeah, so all and of a sudden, he didn't show me very – I mean, after the trade, I mean, Price wasn't dominant by any stretch of the imagination. I don't – you know, he really didn't show me anything to make me believe that a Verlander-Price 1-2 punch is going to be a dominant combination. I don't know. I'm skeptical of that. But the Twins not having to face him, Scherzer I'm talking about, and the Tigers losing those wins. I mean, those are – you know, those are 15, 20 wins off the table that they're going to have to find. So I think that's how it helps the Twins most.
Yeah, well, I mean, the Tigers are still in win-now mode, and they've got an owner that likes to spend money, and James Shields is still out. James Shields is out there. So, you know, it wouldn't surprise me to see the Tigers just go out and reload. Certainly, Shields is not the equivalent.
I hope they spend a buttload of money on James Shields, because I wouldn't – he doesn't scare me at all. He could be in the AL Central for the next.
Cody and I actually agree on this. I mean, James Shields is not impressive. Just not impressive. There's a reason why he, you know, all of these dominoes have started to fall, beginning with Santana, Scherzer, and some of these other guys. There's a reason why Shields is still out there.
Well, I'm 3-2-1 ERA over 34 starts.
Good year.
I mean, this is a guy that has made 33 or 34 starts every year for the past 7 seasons, right? And over that time, he's got a 3.62 ERA. So it hasn't always been really nice, but it has been very good the last couple years. And yeah, he's going to be pitching in his age 33 plus season. So if you give him a 7-year deal, you're lucked up a guy, you know, through age 40. And for a guy that's logged that many innings, right?
I mean, that's what I was going to say. There's a lot of mileage on that arm.
Almost 2,000 innings over his career. That's a recipe for disaster. And this is an opportunity for the Twins to be out on a guy because they're not willing to spend money that works in their favor.
Mm-hmm.
So, but yeah, I think in bringing it back to Scherzer, maybe it helps the Twins because it hurts the Tigers, but I don't know that the Twins are going to be competing with the Tigers over the next 2 years. So I don't know that that factors as much into my thoughts.
I'm not willing to go there. I mean, you guys know how I feel. You know, opening day, everybody's 0-0. It's crazy, crazy things have happened in this game. I'm not willing to rule anybody out or say that the Twins aren't going to be competing for a division or a wild card. Just not ready to say that without having a full feel for what we've got going into 2015. But I hear what you're saying, Eric. I mean, you're probably right.
Well, what about this? So with the Nationals now acquiring Scherzer and having a starting rotation that goes Strasburg, Zimmerman, Scherzer, Pfister, Gio Gonzalez, and Tanner Roark.
Yeah.
I mean, there's been talk out there that they might be in the market to trade Strasburg or trade another one of those starters. Do you think that the Twins might consider making a deal for any of these guys?
I think anybody would be stupid not to consider making a deal for Strasburg or Pfister. I've always been a fan of Gio Gonzalez. I think the guy's as crafty as they come. So it's just a matter. I mean, you know, the first thing they're going to ask. I mean, would you do like? I mean, they're going to be asking for something crazy that you're not willing to give up. You know, would you do Strasburg for Sano? No, of course not. I mean, but that's the kind of thing that I think they'd be looking for.
And Strasburg would be under team control for this year and next year. And then he would be a free agent. And Scott Boris is his agent. So
right.
I would assume that he would like to hit the open market. And it sounds like maybe they've burned some bridges in Washington. It just seems weird to me that their mindset 2 playoffs ago was that they couldn't pitch Strasburg anymore, or 3 playoffs ago, whenever that was. They couldn't pitch him in the playoffs because he was going to be the cornerstone of their rotation for the next decade. And now all of a sudden we're to the point where they don't want him on the team anymore, and they're spending a bunch of money on a guy that's older and probably not, maybe not as good. So I don't know. It's definitely an interesting situation, but,
I think I was just going to say real quick, I think if they did trade Strasburg, you know, the receiving team would have to ask for some sort of extension, whether it's a year, even if it's a year or 2 years. And I don't see why Strasburg would agree to that. So yeah. I don't really see Strasburg moving. I think it'd be more likely to be Pfister or Gonzalez or, well, probably one of those two. Rourke is just too young.
Yeah, the guys that I would be okay giving up are guys that wouldn't get you one of those pitchers, right? I mean, you could say, oh, I'm not sold on Cole Stewart because he's so young, but if you're not sold on Cole Stewart, they're not sold on Cole Stewart.
Would you do Arcia for Pfister?
They wouldn't do that.
Oh, I would do that every day.
say Arcia and a couple other, maybe a first round or second round pick or something, some sort of package with Arcia as a centerpiece.
I don't think Arcia can be the centerpiece. unless you package Arcia with Miguel Sano.
I think you're giving Pfister a little bit too much credit. I don't think Pfister's that great.
Well, he's there and succeeding right now, and Arcia's not doing that. It isn't going to get a lot better, So I think that we know Oswaldo Arcia. We'd love it when he hits the ball, but he doesn't do that enough.
Or stay on the field enough.
So, yeah, I don't think there's a way.
I can't wait until we're around the All-Star break. And Arcia has played in every single game, and he has 17 home runs and 55 RBIs. And I'm getting a little bit weary of you two, particularly being so damn down on Oswaldo Arcia. The guy has done nothing but swing and miss.
Yeah, Jay, if he has 17 home runs at the All-Star break, I will do an entire Talk to Contact podcast with just your daughter and I.
It's a little creepy, so I'll decline. But can we move it back to 14 home runs at the All-Star break and then talk about a wager?
Oh, no. No walking it back.
I'm walking back a little bit here. I'm going to go with 14.
I think we'll see what he does.
We'll see what he does. My point being that, Oswaldo Arcia is going to be an important part of this organization for a lot of years, and he's improved every single year that he's been in the organization. He stays out of trouble. The guy can hit the ball a mile. He's moving to a new position. He doesn't complain about any of this kind of stuff. He's friends with all the Spanish players. He's got that personality that just lights up a room. So I'm not sure what you guys are. I'm not sure what you guys want from Oswaldo Arcia other than to make contact.
That's a lot. I mean, this is a guy that's struck out almost 250 times, essentially, what's that? That's about a third of every time he comes up, he strikes out.
I just don't have a huge problem with that because I just feel like it's part of the growth process. I mean, I remember Ken Griffey Jr. striking out a lot. I remember, McGuire striking. I'm not putting him in the same class as those guys. I'm just trying to make a point. Some of these young power hitters, they're up there to swing. They're up there to swing. I'd rather have him strike out 200 times, when he's 20, whatever he is, and learn from that is the key, than to sit up there and, try and take 10 pitches every at bat. I mean, I don't know. That's why I'm not a coach. But I think his heart's in the right place. His mind's in the right place. It's just a matter of putting everything together for him.
Chicks dig the long ball.
Chicks dig the long ball, especially when it hits off foul poles. That's sexy as hell.
I don't even know what that means.
Oh, good stuff.
I guess the only other news we got here in Twins territory is that now that the Twins caravan is winding down with, I think tonight is actually the Diamond Awards over at Target Field.
Yep. Ceremy is there.
Oh,
Seth and Jeremy are way in the back, but they're there, suit and tied up, and there for the festivities. So you could go back in their Twitter accounts and get the recap of the event from them.
Yes. Yeah, and I'm anxious to do that. I'm kind of jealous. I wish I was at that banquet. Maybe one year I'll get an invite, but. But yeah, it's a super cool night. So I'm anxious to talk with Seth and Jeremy at the meltdown on Saturday and follow their Twitter feed and see how their night was. Because I know I know Seth was pretty excited to go, so I'm sure Jeremy was too. But yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of one of those things. You got to look around. They're probably there. They're looking around. You know, all the players are there. But, you know, all the writers too. You know, all the writers and you know, all the broadcasters and stuff like that. Probably a pretty cool atmosphere. Hope those guys are having fun.
So with the Diamond Awards and the end of the Twins Caravan, that means that Twins Fest is this weekend. Woo. And so I think there's something like 75 former and current Twins.
Which is the most ever.
Yeah, major and minor league players will be making an appearance over the three-day weekend. Jay, I know you're headed over there on Tuesday. And Jay, you're really into this because you're a memorabilia and autographed hunter, whatever you call yourself, memorabilia collector.
Ink addict, right?
Yeah, I'm an ink addict. Ink addict, if for those who are not familiar, comes from Fan HQ, my favorite store over there in the Ridgedale Mall, and they have branded the Ink Addict. They have T-shirts and all kinds of stuff. But yeah, I mean, I love Twins Fest. I really do. I'm going to be waiting. You said Tuesday, Eric. I think you meant Friday. But yeah, I'm going to be there waiting in line for the gates to open tomorrow afternoon with my buddy Mark Smith, friend of the podcast also. And I'll be there Saturday also. And then, I'm sure we'll talk about the meltdown here in a little bit. But you know, Twins Fest is just one of the things during the course of a calendar year that I really, really look forward to. I think it's going to be better this year at Target Field. I think I even saw a tweet again from my buddy Sean over at Fan HQ tweeted out tonight. They set up their booth on the concourse near the Legends Club, and he said that the organization did a much better job this year, letting with the lighting for the exhibitors and the space allowed and the locations and stuff like that. So it seems early on that the organization listened to what people had to say after last year's inaugural Target Field Twins Fest and made some improvements. So I was glad to see that. I'm actually thinking about buying like a bat, you know, like maybe a game used bat or something like that, and then having just everybody sign that this year, something a little different. Usually I get, you know, I get a ball and I have one guy sign the ball on the sweet spot, put it in a cube, it goes on my hutch. But this year I'm thinking about maybe doing a bat and having, you know, just everybody on, at least everybody on the 40 man. See, that's the kind of thing, they have these guys grouped up and they have like, you know, BJ Hermanson next to J.O. Berrios, and it's like, sorry, dude, I don't want your autograph on my bat, but Berrios, I'd sure like you to, you know what I mean? So I don't know. We'll see.
Cody, what about you? What are you looking forward to at Twins Fest this year?
I'm planning on being there all day Saturday, prior to the meltdown. But I don't know. I have a lot of the autographs of guys that I would like. So I don't know how much I'll be waiting around for any autographs. I might try. I know there's one of the photos, the photo times on Saturday, where you can get a photo with players. One of them is Buxton and Sano. And I thought that would be a cool one. I might try and get in that line a little bit early because I'm sure there'll be a bunch of people that want to be in that line. So that, I think that's one of the main things I'm going to try and get into. I might hop in. I think there's like an hour on Saturday where all the lines are only $5 for autographs.
Yeah.
And Berrios is in one of those sessions. So I have a few trading cards signed by him, but I don't have a baseball. So I might pick up a baseball from our friends over at Fan HQ there and, have Berrios sign that up for me.
You know what Cody's talking about? It's from 1:45 to 2:45 on Saturday. All of the autograph locations will have players at them. And for $5, I mean, we're talking $5, you can get Arcia, Thielbar, and Berrios. I mean, that is just a steal. They have the other groups. You can get like Hicks, Fien, and Fryer. Plouffe, Darnell, and Murphy. I mean, you can go look at the schedule, but that 1 hour there that Cody's talking about, for the $5 is a steal if you're interested in any of those guys. You know, while we're on this kind of, and Eric, you and I talked a little bit about it this afternoon, but you know, for as good a deal as that is, I mean, $70 for a Sano Molitor and Sano. So if Molitor signs a bat. So if you have a bat like I kind of want, and you bring that to the Sonneau Molitor Station on Saturday afternoon, you're going to pay $70 for those two autographs, which seems super high to me. Maurer by himself on Saturday mornings, $35. That I guess is okay. But it seems like some of the prices for the marquee guys are noticeably at least a little bit higher, $5 or $10 higher this year. I don't have a huge problem paying it. I mean, it's your choice. You don't want to pay the $70, don't pay the $70. You know, go find something else to do. I think it might be a little bit aimed at mitigating some lines. That line for Buxton last year was ridiculous. It was ridiculous. I waited in that Buxton line for 3 hours. I never got an autograph. So I had a bad taste in my mouth about that. So I think the higher prices for the marquee guys might have something to do with the lines. But overall, I'll just be real quick. I'm sorry. I'll keep going here. But overall, looking at the lineup, and they have a lot of different other things too. They have like the selfie station, which seems super neat. The Caribbean corner. They have all these. They've added some new things. And the if you're an autographer, even if like Cody was saying with the photos, man, they really make every single player in the organization, minor league, major league, and alumni, is accessible this weekend. And I just think overall, you know, the Twins do a really good job with this.
Yeah, I don't know. I go to Twins Fest mostly just to dick around and chat with people. I like to find out where the beer is for sale and never get too far away from that area. I enjoy playing the children's games that they have set up, like bowling with Joe Maurer or the pitch speed activities, things like that. I just like to wander around and look at people, see what they got. The memorabilia stuff that they had down in the basement, I guess you'd call it, is neat to look at one time through, but I'm definitely not buying anything because I don't know what I'm looking at, and I'm mostly into things that cost $5 or less. But if you, like me, are into things that cost $5 or less, the Twins have the garage sale that they do every year, and so they'll sell a bunch of game-used memorabilia that you might not want, like Brian Dinkelman's game-used spring training pants from when he was in Double-A or something like that. So you can get some stuff to look at, old game programs or the nameplates that they put up above lockers of players in the locker room, maybe guys that make one or two starts and appear here or there. So you can get a lot of neat things, some more obscure things. That's the kind of things that I like to have around to look at. I think as I'm looking around at some of the Twins memorabilia I have at my house, I have some. Do you guys ever have those starting lineup collectible figurines?
Oh, yeah.
And so I've got a Shane Mack, a Scott Erickson, and a Frank Viola, all of which I purchased for $4.99 each.
Are they in the box, in the case, in the blister pack still, or have you taken them out?
They're in the blister pack, but it looks like the blister pack went through the dryer. So some of it's peeling off. There's price tags on it from like the multiple different retail stores it was previously sold at. But they're still definitely in the pack. They got the cards with them, and the Scott Erickson has a poster with it.
Ooh!
And the Shane Mack has actually two cards instead of just one. So they're pretty awesome items, you guys. So
they're great, Eric. Yep.
They're great. What else do I have around here? I have a miniature foam finger from last year's Fan Fest.
Oh, yeah.
I have a plush pennant that's made out of that like all plastic vinyl stuff.
That's enough. This is ridiculous. Let me ask you this, Eric. If you had one guy that you could meet, shake his hand, take a photo, get an autograph, whatever it would be, which guy at Twins Fest would you wait in line to see to do that kind of stuff?
I haven't looked at the list, so I don't know who's there.
I mean,
but
it's everybody. I don't see anybody that's missing.
If it could be anybody, it would be the Twins' newest Gulf Coast League coaching assistant, Brian Dinkelman.
You're ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous.
Brian Dinkelman became my new favorite player long ago. Then he had those couple cups of coffee with the Twins. Went to McKendree College, now McKendree University down in Southern Illinois. Guy is always smiling, always hustling. I don't know. I like that guy. I would like to meet him and say, Mr. Dink, you're a pretty cool guy. And just shake his hand.
I'm wearing your pants.
Yes. That would be awesome. I need to get a pair of his pants and then meet him.
Yeah, I wish Paul was here because that story with the Bartlett uniform that he purchased at Twins Fest. Oh, and a Butera. Didn't he buy a Butera jersey?
Yeah, I think he has a Butera jersey, like a Redman jersey. I think he might have a Kevin Slowey jersey and Bartlett's pants.
And then he actually did buy Jason Bartlett's pants.
Yeah, Jason Bartlett's game used, they're powder blue or something.
Powder blue, oh, yeah.
So, yeah, Paul's picture floats around there every once in a while. If you Google Paul's name and cat picture, I think you'll find it. He's standing in his hallway pretending to pitch his cat. So, yeah, I don't know. Twins Fest is fun if you like collecting real stuff or crappy stuff, or if you just like to have a beer and be at the ballpark because you can't wait for spring to come.
Well, you know, the other thing I like about it too is you really get full access to the entire stadium. I mean, not the bleachers of the field because of the weather, but that whole suite level, the Legends Club, you get to see all of the stuff that's in the organization's museum, the trophies and the plaques and the memorabilia and stuff like that they have all enshrined and cased up.
Yeah, the clubhouse tours.
You get the clubhouse tours. This year you can take batting practice in the actual batting cages. You know what I was actually disappointed in a little bit, though, is that they don't have national anthem auditions, which my daughter was really looking forward to, which they've done in every year that I can remember going. I don't remember it actually taking place last year, but I don't remember it not. So
I think the move to Target Field because of the reduced amount of people that can fit in the space that they have, they've switched to like online, you know, like sending in a video type stuff for that.
Well, see, that's good to know. I didn't know that. So that'll make her feel a little better. She loves making videos of herself singing, so this will be right up her alley.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can't wait to see that video.
But yeah, no, so I really like that stuff. Like you were saying, Eric, the beers are all local, or most of them. I mean, you can buy Budweiser and stuff like that, but they have a lot of craft beers from local breweries. The Twins have really made an effort to include those guys. Kind of started with Surly, but they have Lucid, they have a couple other ones. So they have a bunch of fresh, locally brewed beer. My favorite thing is the grab bags. They're like 20 or 25 bucks, which sounds like a lot. But you're like guaranteed a bobblehead, a couple autographs, like a bat. They have bronze statues, old calendars and programs and all kinds of yearbooks and stuff like that. So I think it's actually the best deal of the whole Twins Fest are those grab bags for 20 bucks.
Yeah, and I do, Jay. I go after the grab bag. That's the one thing, because you get lots of that crap that I like. But I also like to get the team calendar, and that hangs in my office at work.
Yeah.
So. Between the calendar and the crap, you can't go wrong.
Calendar and crap, can't go wrong. And this year, unfortunately, the both of you are going to miss it. But Brian Dozier and his band will be playing at Twins Fest on Friday night.
Silky Smooth?
Yeah.
Wait, I didn't know Silky Smooth is playing.
This is breaking news. I just saw it on Twitter about 15 minutes ago.
I need to... I'm going to get a ticket. I might even pay the $2 online fee to get the ticket. I recently acquired one of those Brian Dozier full-size stand-up deals.
You did? Where'd you get that?
I got that from Bob Boland, a friend of mine, ice fishing friend. And so I now have that in my office as the guy I'm always working with, who's my constant visitor.
For you guys who don't know what Eric's talking about, last year the Twins sent out to all their season ticket holders and partial season ticket holders, it's not life size, but it's probably like 3/4 size cardboard cutout.
It's pretty close to life size.
It probably is pretty close. He's kind of short. But they're really cool. And Eric, you should get that signed. You should bring that and get it signed.
Nope. Not doing that. But it's cool. So it's already signed. It has a signature right on the bottom of it.
That's a facsimile.
Well, that's just as good as a real one.
Oh, don't get Jay going.
I'm just not gonna.
Listen, at work we accept faxes with signatures on them all the time.
Okay. Well, hey, I'm glad you're happy, buddy. That's really all that matters.
That is. I'm glad you're on my side about this.
Yeah. So anyway, I will report back on how Brian Dozier's stage presence and singing talents go. He'll be on stage at 7:15 tomorrow evening, and Mark Smith and I will be in the front row if we have anything to say about it.
Good. I hope you send me a YouTube video or something of it.
Could probably make that happen.
I'm looking forward to it.
You guys want to talk a little bit about the Meltdown?
Well, we can. So I think if you're listening to this podcast, you probably know all about the Meltdown already. But the Twins Daily Winter Meltdown is on Saturday evening. So for $30, if you don't have your ticket already, I think there's just a little bit of them still available. But you get a pint glass, two free beers, admission to the event to hear Dave St. Peter, Jack Jones, and Tim Laudner talk. Plus...
Yeah, Laudner just pulled out. They're having
Laudner
some
will not be there.
Family health issues, so we're supposed to keep him in our thoughts and prayers here. So it'll still be Jack Jones and Dave St. Peter, though, which is pretty cool.
And so, for those interested, Eric wrote a fantastic post for Red Current this week talking about John Bonas and Twins Daily and the Meltdown and how kind of the whole thing really got started. You can find that at redcurrent.com. I'll do a shameless plug there. But Eric did a great job talking to John, really getting some behind-the-scenes stuff that I've never seen or heard anywhere else. So if you're all interested in Twins Daily and Gleeman and the Geek and how this whole podcast, blog, Twins off-season stuff, Nerd Fest got started, go check it out. Good job, Eric.
Thanks, Jay. Well, why don't we wrap up our Twins segment here, and we'll go reviewing the roster. This week, we're going to talk about J.R. Graham, Irvin Santana, and the aforementioned Brian Dozier of Silky Smooth. So we should start with Brian Dozier because he's the best part of everything that anyone could ever talk about. And you guys, here's the thing. Last year, last winter, we were all pretty excited about Brian Dozier after that blazing hot second half. This year, he came out and had a blazing hot first half, and then he really struggled down the stretch or came back to earth. And I have no idea what Brian Dozier is going to be like in 2015. I certainly think he's going to be league average, which is really good to get out of your second baseman who was, you know, you never expected to be this good, but league average for Brian Dozier all of a sudden seems like a disappointment.
Yeah, I get your frustration with the unpredictability and the fluctuation in production, but I feel like he's being asked to do a lot. He's being asked to play the middle infield every single day. He's being asked to lead off and be the catalyst for this offense. When he goes into a slump, the team goes into a slump, it feels like. The guy had nobody hitting behind him, and he's still – well, I mean, you know, Mauer wasn't Mauer most – so, but he still led the league and run scored or damn near close to it. I'd like to see a little more consistency out of him, but I'll take Brian Dozier defensively just about any damn day. He led the league in putouts last year, which I put a higher value on than you guys do. He didn't make a crazy amount of errors. He was far from a liability. I put him at a plus. You know, and again, offensively, you know, he took a lot of walks. I mean, a lot of walks. And I don't know, you know, I don't know what else you could really, really ask a guy to do. I know the hole in my whole argument is, you know, is the consistency, but I'd like to see Brian Dozier extended. I'd like to see it done before the season starts, to be honest with you. I'm a fan of Brian Dozier, man. I want him around for a while.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you look at his numbers, I mean, we were all impressed with that first half. Overall, it would be nice. I mean, he's getting on base at a very decent rate. He increased his on-base percentage last year. His slugging percentage stayed about the same as what it was the year before, only a couple points difference. I like to see him cut back on some of the strikeouts. I mean, he's had over 120 in each of the last two seasons, so that would be nice to see some of that. you want him to still have that power, though, that we saw as well.
You know what, though, Cody, I'm glad you brought that up, because almost seems like almost all those home runs were right down the left field line, just inside the foul pole. So I mean, I know they go for a home run in the numbers and the stat sheet, but I don't know. I don't really see him ever being a power hitter. You know what I mean?
No, but he should be. He's gonna hit more home runs than most of the starting second basemen in the American League.
If he hit 15 home runs this year, would you be happy?
Depends on some of his other numbers. If he hits 15 and is only hitting 200, I'm not going to be happy. And I think, I know, Jay, you love his defense and stuff like that, but there are some parts of his defensive game that need to improve, and I think it's a jump that we could see from him this year, where we saw the same thing with Trevor Plouffe last year, where he finally figured out the Twins had him locked in at that one position. Dozier, I mean, had been playing a lot of shortstop coming through the minor leagues. I think once he's had multiple seasons here to work out some of those kinks at second base, I think defensively we could see a much better Brian Dozier this year.
Yeah.
Get rid of some of those, some of the errors that he had last year, and then just see him be able to know the routes he needs to take to get to some of those balls that were at the edge of his zone last year, and being able to know and just have the baseball mentality to know where he needs to go on that side of the ball. And working with the same pitching staff, for the most part, that can help to, just for positioning purposes. And I think the Twins under Molitor are going to be more apt to do some defensive shifting and maybe put Dozier in some better positions to make the plays that he needs to make to push him from not being just an above average second baseman, but to being in that upper tier of second baseman in the American League.
All very good points, Cody. And I think that we will see him improve. I think some of those errors, I mean, I like his range. I really do. I know you guys have been critical about his range, but I think he's got very good range. He hustles after every ball. But what I was getting at is, if we do see an improvement in Dozier, even if it's minimal, and we see Mauer solidify on the right at first base, that's a hell of a defensive right side of the infield.
Yeah, I mean, it could be one of the best if they're both playing at a high level, offensively and defensively. I mean, we could see them at the end of the year both being contenders for Gold Gloves if we're seeing positive jumps from Dozier. And Mauer has the ability to be a very good first baseman over there. And I mean, the same goes for him. It's just, you know, figuring out that position that he hadn't had a lot of experience at. So as we're getting both of them in, you know, they've been at that, their new positions, quote unquote, for multiple seasons here, we should be able to see some positive change.
All right, Eric, I'm anxious to hear what you have to say.
I thought I said it there. I mean, just league average, right? I mean,
would you extend Brian Dozier? Would you give him a contract extension right now?
No. I wouldn't, because he's still locked up for what? We got two more years of team control?
Till 19. So he can't be a free agent till 19.
Yeah.
He's not even arbitration eligible yet.
So three more seasons, and then he could be a goner. So, I mean, you got another year before you even really feel any pressure to do it. And maybe he puts together a strong season this year and puts together those two half seasons he had the last 2 years. Maybe that ends up costing you $5 million, but you would hate for the Twins to make another deal and all of a sudden Brian Dozier to be the positional Nick Blackburn.
Yeah. Right?
To make that extension before they have to, with a guy that doesn't necessarily bring with you a ton of upside. So I think there's no risk with not doing it right now.
I get that. It makes sense. It's, I mean, that's logical. It's a logical argument.
So I'd just hold off, but, you know, he's a nice little player making the league minimum or just over it. I think the Twins gave him a little bump, but, yeah, I'm not – he's a nice piece to have. You don't have to worry about second base and, you know, until Jorge Polanco comes up or, you know, whoever the next guy is, it's fine. There's no log jam there, right? Nick Gordon is the next great guy that's going to come up the middle, and if Gordon pushes Polanco to second base, you know, Brian Dozier doesn't need to be in the way. And if Brian Dozier is still in the way at that point, then you're paying him and you're happy to pay him because that means that he has become a lot more reliable and consistent than he has been. But that's kind of a super long way of looking at 2015, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we've talked about Ervin Santana a little bit. So, you know, he's a big signing this winter. We kind of talked about who he is, what he does, you know. So I don't know that we want to spend a ton of time with him, but certainly you got to imagine he slots in as the number two to start the year. You know, this is another guy that's been durable. Again, so the Twins have paid for durability with Nolasco, you know, a year ago, and now with Santana this year, this is a guy that's made 30-plus starts the last five seasons and six of the last seven. So, I mean, he's out there. He's throwing innings. They haven't always been super pretty, especially, you know, his last full couple of seasons in the American League. But this is a guy that has the ability to get some strikeouts. You know, he could, if everything goes right, he's flirting with 100 strikeouts or 200 strikeouts in the National League. You know, maybe regress that back in the American League because now you're facing designated hitters instead of pitchers every time through the lineup. But this is a guy that should throw 150 to 170 strikeouts, you know, in 200 innings. So something the Twins haven't really seen a lot of the last couple seasons. And if he can keep the ball in the ballpark, which has been a big issue for him, especially when he was playing in more hitter-friendly parks, then he should be okay.
Yeah, I don't have a whole lot to add other than that. I'm just excited to see this guy pitch over the next few years. I mean, I think this was a great signing. I fully support it. I'm actually a little surprised that they were able to pull it off. I think he's going to be solid. He's going to be a solid number two for sure. I just love the experience, the track record. Correct me if I'm wrong, but he hasn't had any major Tommy John surgery or anything like that. He's proven pretty durable. So I'm just really looking forward to seeing Santana on the mound. And I'm looking forward to seeing him this weekend at Twins Fest. I'm going to squeeze his bicep a little bit, you know, kind of size him up, pat his belly, see what kind of weight he's at. I'll bring back a full report.
Well, just ask him about smell baseball. I would love to hear the genesis of smell baseball.
Yeah, so my plan for Santana is to, you know, whether it's the bat I was mentioning or ball, I want to get him, you know, his auto, and then I want to have him put # smell baseball.
Good luck with that.
Oh, I'm sure. I bet you he'll do it. I hope he will.
You don't just become a smell baseball guy and not sign it on autographs. Yeah.
Well, we'll see. I'll report back on his physical condition and whether or not he inscribed smell baseball.
Good. Good. Any other thoughts on Gonzalez? Otherwise, we'll jump over to the new guy, J.R. Graham.
Let's rock and roll.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll go first just because I really don't know a whole lot about him. You guys know, you guys are much more well-versed on the organization's minor league prospects than I am, so I'll kind of defer to your analysis here.
So J.R. Graham was the Twins' Rule 5 draft pick this past year. He's a shorter guy, so he's, you know, listed at 6 foot, probably not that tall as those listings go. Not terribly heavy, and in the past he had thrown, you know, as high as 100 miles an hour, but he's had some shoulder issues, and those shoulder issues kind of have kept him from being a big-time starting pitcher prospect. Imagine the issues that the Twins have been having and that we're all familiar with Alex Meyer and shoulder issues, and make it a little bit worse So he had maybe more upside than Alex Meyer at a time, but he's had injuries that have been worse than Alex Meyer has had. And so if he sticks as the Rule 5 draftee, he has to be on the roster all year long. Probably just pitches in low-level situations, what kind of the Twins did this a couple of years ago with Ryan Pressly, who a guy I never thought would stick on the Twins roster all year. So they hit him back there. It costs him a year of development, but also gets him, you know, a year of seeing what it's like in the major leagues, maybe gives him something to aspire to in the next couple seasons once he could be in the system. If he is still with the Twins in the third week of April, I'll be surprised at this point.
Yeah, he hasn't pitched above the AA level, and he's pitched at that level for parts of the last three seasons with Atlanta. He was ranked a couple seasons ago. He was in both Baseball America and Baseball Prospectus's top 100 prospects, just because of, he had shown some good things in that 2012 season, and had put up some good numbers. So it'll be interesting. Yeah, like you said, Eric, if he sticks around. Or not, or if it's like, the last time the Twins took someone from Atlanta in the Rule 5 draft was Scott Diamond, and they didn't end up keeping him on the roster, but they worked out a deal in order to keep him in the organization. And then Diamond ended up having, you know, one good season here at least before the Twins cut ties. So it'll be interesting to see what Graham can do, how he looks for spring training, and if the Twins are willing to keep him on the roster, or if some kind of deal will have to be struck.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly value in getting a player for $50,000, right? So the upside is he becomes a major league player. So there's every reason to try and keep him there, especially if your team is going to be bad. It's just a matter of, you know, how good is the rest of the bullpen, what happens with the starters? Are there guys that are just going to get squeezed out of those roster spots where he'll be able to stick this year? You know, because we're already talking about moving a starter, a full-time starter, into the bullpen just to have room for all these guys. So, you know, that doesn't necessarily bode well for a guy like Graham sticking with the Twins.
We shall see.
Okay, well, with that, why don't we take a break? We'll come back. We'll talk about beer. We'll go around the league, and we'll get out of here.
Rock and roll.
I've said it before, and I'll say it again, that Egon's Unicat is one of my favorites. Please go find them on iTunes and support your local indie punk rock. I don't even know where they're from. Where are they from, Eric? Illinois or something crazy like that?
Yeah, Central Illinois punk rockers.
Yeah, yeah. So go support Egon's Unicat. You know they're probably starving and eating tuna for three meals a day. So go buy a couple songs from Egon's Unicat. We're going to jump right into one of our favorite segments here on the podcast, beers from around the world.
Oh, and when Jay makes that noise, it drives the women crazy.
Is that what happens?
I think that's accurate.
You know what I want to know? I want to know why they call Miller Lite the champagne of beer. You know why? Because I don't think Stella or Artois is the champagne of beer. That is what I'm drinking
tonight.
Don't
they call High Life the champagne of beer?
Oh, that's right. You're right. High Life. High Life.
Yeah, it's not Miller Lite.
So anyway, you're drinking a Stella.
I'm drinking a Stella, and man, they're good. They're, you know, I kind of like the lighter, the blonder kind of beers, and so Stella's kind of right up my alley. I love the carbonation. It's fresh. It's got a great taste. I love Stella. I'm gonna go on a little Stella spree here over the next few weeks, I think.
Let me tell you why I don't like Stella. Because I don't like saying it. Because it's the Artois part.
Stella Artois.
After you had two beers, you just can't do it anymore. So it's a hindrance to my good time having. So I steer away from it, unless it's just handed to me. Plus, don't you got to drink that in one of them weird old glasses? Is that one of them beers that has its own glass?
That's true. It does have its own glass, but I'm drinking it straight out of the bottle.
Oh, God, you rebel.
Yeah, Alan Rubble. When you get the cap off, though, you know, the paper, because it's like kind of like, you know, it's kind of got that champagne, like the paper covers the whole neck. So when you pop the cap, you still got like some paper in your mouthpiece there. It kind of gets in the way, and you have a beard like me. You know, it kind of creates some problems, but I'm willing to adapt and overcome.
Wow, the sacrifices you make
for
this adult beverage.
I know.
All right. Mr. Christie, what do you got?
Mr. Christie, yes. I am consuming a Summit Brewing Company True Brit IPA. One of Summit's, they have a few different IPAs, but this one is a little bit hoppier since it's the British style IPA, since it was... they talk about how it was originally meant to be a beer that could last from the voyage from Great Britain over to India. But it's a little bit darker, I would say, than some IPAs. Definitely hoppy, definitely has a good malty taste to it as well. A little bit of caramel taste to it, but yeah, definitely the hops are the thing that that stand out in this one.
Sounds pretty good. I went on a beer adventure last weekend. I met up with a friend and former podcast guest Chuck Reuther, and Chuck and I drove all the way out to Marshall, Minnesota to visit the Brow Brothers Brewery. And we drank just about every beer that they had on tap. Plus, they pulled a special Russian Imperial Stout out of the back room for us.
Wow.
So we had one of those as well. On the way back from Brow Brothers, we stopped at Waconia. We stopped at Enki Brewing. We stopped at Excelsior Brewing. So four breweries in one day. I think I had 14 different beers that afternoon and evening. So it was an excellent, excellent day. Today, I'm drinking none of those beers again, because I didn't have the foresight to bring a growler with me or pick one up while I was there. So I'm actually just drinking a beer out of the fridge, but this is maybe one of the best beers that I've ever had in my entire life. It's a special treat whenever I can have it. It's the New Glarus Raspberry Tart, and this is a fruit beer. It's very low ABV, so I think it's 4%, maybe 4.5%, so it's low ABV, and it's very fruit forward, so it's almost like a beer and a juice combined. But holy cow, this thing is just so, so good. You could drink a whole bomber of them and not even get bombed up, so that's pretty good. And it's just crisp, it's refreshing, it reminds you of everything that's good about the summertime and cold beverages, and you just want to like go to your cabin and go fishing when you have one of them. So I don't know, if you ever find yourself in Wisconsin, which I know is pretty terrible, go and get yourself the New Glarus Raspberry Tart. You will not be disappointed. It's that good. It's amazing.
I'm probably never going to heed that advice ever.
You have to go to Wisconsin, which you don't need to do, but
yeah,
you have to have, you need to try one before you die.
Can you sneak one into Twins Fest to me, since I probably won't meet up with you before that?
I cannot. We just have the one bomber here at the house.
Ah, okay.
And I would not be willing to share it also.
All right. I see where I rank.
It's that good. So unless you're snuggling up against me at nighttime, you're not getting any of this.
Is that an invitation?
It's a long drive from Fargo, Cody.
Yeah, we'll see how crazy the winter meltdown gets.
Okay, well, let's go around the league, shall we?
Let's do it.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite segments. Where do you guys want to start?
Well, let's start with A-Rod, because as I've said before, I love Alex Rodriguez. I love to think about how good he was. I love to think of what a douche he is. I love everything about him. And now I love him even more because he's been working out with Barry Bonds.
Has he been working out with Barry Bonds, or have they just consulted, talked a little bit? Or maybe
they've been just exchanging creams and clears, I think.
No, they've been working. Bonds works out with other guys too, but it just doesn't seem like the best PR move on the part of A-Rod. But at this point, I don't know how much further A-Rod could muddy his name. You know, he might as well work out with Bonds because Bonds has been, I mean, in a similar situation. There aren't many hitters that have been better than A-Rod besides, you know, Barry Bonds and a handful of other guys. So it's someone that he could maybe learn something from.
Barry Bonds knows about fitness, man. This is a guy that, whatever you want to say about steroids, this is a guy that even after baseball was over, he got into like cycling. I mean, he is fit and scary looking, and he's, you know, getting to be an older gentleman. So if he can impart some wisdom to A-Rod and say, this is a new way to work out, you just got to rub this stuff on your butt, and you get stronger and faster, you hit home runs. I don't know. I'm all for it. More controversy around A-Rod is better.
I don't know. I just seems like a slow hot stove season to be kind of talking about this. I just don't think it's that big of a deal. Like Cody said, Bonds works out with other guys. He's worked out with other guys in previous off seasons. I know the A-Rod Bonds combo makes it sexy for the headlines, but yeah, no, I always, you know, and even when Bonds was playing, I was always a fan of Bonds. I mean, I watched Bonds is part of the reason why I became such a baseball fan as a young kid. I saw him play against the Mets a lot, and I knew when you watched Barry Bonds, when he, you know, when I was, you know, 8, 9, 10 years old watching Barry Bonds play for the Pittsburgh Pirates, that you could tell there was just something special about him. I still remember that. I mean, I really do. So to have Bonds as a consultant to A-Rod or anybody else, I don't really see what the big deal is. I mean, the guy has paid his punishment. You know, he's done his penance. He's not going to make it into the Hall of Fame, and all of his records have asterisks or tainted or whatever you want to call it. But the guy is still a hell of a baseball player. You know, almost like a once in a lifetime type dude. So if Alex Rodriguez or anybody else wants to go and ask him for advice or work out with him or whatever else, I have no problem with that.
Well, what else you got on the hot stove then? What is worthy of Jay Korn's time?
Well, I think we kind of touched on it before, but there are some free agents still looking for homes, most notably among them James Shields. Where do you guys think he'll land?
Gosh, I don't know. Someone's just going to get desperate at the end of this and give him a deal.
You think so?
Yeah, and I don't have any idea where it's going to be, but somebody is going to be desperate and sign him up.
Do you think he would be willing to sign a shorter-term deal just, you know, so he could hit the free agent market again at a relatively young age, like kind of, you know, sign a 1 or 2 year deal and get a couple good years under his belt and hit free agency again?
It would have to be a 1 year deal, and he'd have to, you know, still hope to remain healthy. And I think that's a pretty big if for him at this point, you know, like we said, with all the mileage on that arm. So, yeah. I mean, he's already an older gentleman. So the market is there for him to be able to sign a multi-year, you know, set your family for the next three generations type deal already. So I don't know how much more, how bigger that money could get next year. Right. So I mean, there's not a lot of reward for him to do that 1 year deal because he's going to get paid a boatload of money this winter. Just because he hasn't gotten it yet, I still think he's definitely going to get it. So it's just a matter of time for him, and it'll happen. Some team will do it, and they'll regret it 3 years from now.
You know, I didn't even realize, you guys, but there were quite a few deals here in the last week, and there actually, you know what, there really aren't a whole lot of free agents left other than Shields, Colby Rasmus still looking for a team.
Rasmus signed.
Rasmus is signed, so this is, you know, so things are. Where did he sign? I mean,
Houston. Houston, huh? Watch out! They're going to be good.
Yeah, the Astros are firmly on the path to being respectable.
Relevant.
Well, yeah. they also signed Jed Lowry from the Athletics, and I was really a fan of Lowry last year. I thought he had a good year. They signed him too, so the Astros not making a huge splash, but putting some pieces together.
Yeah, I would have rather signed Rasmus for $8 million than Torii Hunter.
Maybe I'm just not as up to date as I usually am during the regular season. But did we mention Josh Willingham announcing his retirement? Am I reading that right?
Yeah, we talked about that a while back when it happened. But yeah, it called it quits. He's younger, but had some injuries here or there. It'd be nice for him to spend some time with his family. So another guy that might be close to retirement is Mr. Johan Santana. He got shut down again, more shoulder issues, was trying to make a comeback in the Winter League. It's got to be the end for him. I mean, he's had multiple surgeries, and unless this was just some little hiccup or something like that, his one outing, I think he hit 90 with his fastball. A couple times, but he was basically in the high 80s. So not blowing people away like he used to. So there were rumors that there were multiple teams interested in him after that first outing, but then the report came out that that they had to shut him down with some more shoulder stuff. So I don't know. It's not the ending I wanted for – I mean, he was, such a key part of this Twins team for so many years, and a guy that was just likable and, always had that smile on his face when he was, in between games and stuff like that. For the dominant presence that he was for this team for multiple years, and just his overall story, a guy I wanted to continue to see succeed and not see his career end the way that it seems like it's going to end here.
Yeah, man, I think he gave it everything he could. He's tried, this is the second year in a row that he's really tried to catch on somewhere. And, that body, your body just doesn't hold up. I'm approaching my mid-30s, and, my dad always used to say, you don't feel the same as you did when you're 25, when you're 35, and when you're 45, you don't feel like you did when you're 35, and so on and so forth. And he's, as most things, I guess, my dad was right. I mean, it's just a matter. It's not that it's not that the desire's there. It's not anything other than his body simply is unable to carry out the necessary functions to pitch at the major league level.
Yeah, a couple other things then from around the league. Padres were awarded the 2016 All-Star Game. This year's All-Star Game is in Cincinnati, so that'll be back-to-back All-Star games in the National League that we'll see over the next couple of years. 2017 is rumored to either be going to Baltimore or Miami.
Well, wasn't 2016 was supposed to go to Baltimore, right?
Yeah.
And then they're kind of having this TV deal dispute with the Nationals with Mason, and baseball decided, well, maybe we'll just wait on you.
Yeah. So maybe a little bit of controversy there. But they try and get it into these new stadiums. The Padres have been in Petco for, like a decade already, and they still hadn't gotten an All-Star game yet. So it was probably about time. I've been to that stadium the last two summers, and I've really liked my experience there. So I think it's good that San Diego's going to get it, especially with what they've done this offseason to try and bolster baseball in that city. And then Baltimore or Miami for the next year, you think they'd want to get it in an American League town again. So maybe Baltimore has a leg up there for 2017. But Miami needs it sometime because they haven't had it in their new stadium yet. And then it sounds like 2018 is pretty close to being a done deal for it being in Washington, which also hasn't had one yet in their new stadium. The All-Star games for the next, handful of years are starting to get locked down.
You know, real, it made me kind of think of something. If you guys could visit one ballpark that you haven't been to yet, which one would it be?
Ooh. For me, it would probably be Wrigley.
For me, it would also be Wrigley.
Wrigley is a dump.
Yeah, and that's fine.
It's going to be radically different with this update that they're doing this winter. So you may have missed the prime opportunity to see Wrigley as the real dump that it is. The bones of the dump will still be there, of course, for you to see. But I think for me, Camden Yards is the place where I want to go. It just seems like an awesome place to watch a baseball game, and I haven't been there yet, so it's on my baseball bucket list yet. I would say Camden Yards and AT&T out there in San Francisco.
I would also like to see AT&T, and I have not been to Fenway, so all of those are good choices. Do you think anybody? I mean, if you think anybody else around the country, you think that any of them would say Target Field? Maybe, maybe not.
I doubt it, unless they had been to a bunch of other stadiums and they had just heard good things about it. You know, if they'd been to a dozen stadiums already and it hit, you know, the big ones, the Fenways, the Wrigley's, the San Francisco's, to Dodger Stadium, you know, Yankee Stadium. If they've been to a lot of those, maybe that would be one. I know I've sat at games around people that had come into Target Field just because they wanted to get into see that stadium. They had traveled from New York or whoever the team, whoever they were playing that weekend to, because they wanted to get into the new stadium and had heard good things about it.
Yeah. I don't think it's not a destination ballpark, but it's one of those where if you're a fan of a team and that team happens to then be playing at Target Field, you probably then go check it out, right? But you don't start your trip saying, well, Target Field is a place we have to go see a baseball game because it's so great.
Yeah,
so let's go there.
Yeah.
But Minnesota in June is a place that's so great that you should go there. So, I don't know, maybe people do want to come up here. I don't know. And we're going to the ballpark all the time. Well, I am. Cody, you're a little bit farther away, but you still make it for a couple series every summer or spring.
Yeah.
You know, so maybe we don't appreciate it because it is one of those that, you know, time after time it comes out as a great ballpark, at least the experience, as a place to see a baseball game and the way the sight lines work and the way it just fits right into downtown. It's very special that way. And so maybe we lose some of that because we're there all the time and it's our home ballpark. But I just don't know that it's destination watching.
It also doesn't help that, you know, the ball club isn't exactly in the national spotlight. That could change some things, too. But we digress.
Yeah. So, anybody got anything else before we wrap this show up?
No, not particularly. I had fun this week, fellas. Thanks.
All right. If you're listening to this podcast before Saturday, we'll see you at Twins Fest, and we'll see you at the Winter Meltdown. Have a good week. If you're just gonna focused on the times we had, the bitterness of what could be. We're never alone. Never necessary. Stayed with you, then what could I do? Smile, see self-pictures. The future's gone and we focused on the times we had.
bitterness so I could be, but we're never.